ser ético, isto é uma crença.
É uma religião muito grande.
A visão é um culto. É coragem, que é liberdade, que é crer, que é vontade, que é o caráter das pessoas.
Calma de quem é grande, maior que os maiores.
É uma paixão com outra explicação.
Eu não consigo explicar o que é ser do Benfica. Eu sinto o que é ser do Benfica.
Mas de facto uma paixão. E as paixões são assim, vivem-se assim intensamente.
Aqui não há nenhuma razão. É paixão, paixão, paixão.
Ser Benfica.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another edition of the Talking to the Doll Benfica podcast. Episode number 322 is what we're serving up tonight. Before we get going and let you know what's on tap, I will go ahead and introduce everyone. As you know, no need for introduction. Cristiano Oliveira is here in studio with me. Cristiano, how you doing, man?
I'm fine. After the panic attack I had on Sunday, I'm glad to let everyone know that I'm doing well right now.
Right. Also, Dave Oliveira is with us. Dave, what's happening?
Nothing much. Good to be back on. Like Cristiano, also good to have some nerves calmed a little bit and take it easy after an eventful Sunday game here.
Right. And also with us, and he's been with us for the past few episodes now, Hugo Ferreira, who's fresh off a Game of Thrones marathon, is ready to podcast tonight. What's going on, Hugo?
What's going on, guys? Thanks for having me back. I guess I'm finally recovered from that emotion on Sunday.
Yeah, I will get into that, but I remember texting Hugo, "Epai, eu te mandei a mulher para o caralho."
Sem dúvida. A funny story is she walks into the living room, Braga had just scored, and I literally just said, "Yo, you right now, you just need to leave. You need to leave. Get out of here, please." I was heated.
All right. So on tonight's agenda, as always, we will recap the Braga game and what a game it was. As you got a chance to listen to Hugo, roller coaster of emotions, as Cristiano has mentioned, and we'll also look ahead to Benfica against Porto. Portimonense. That comes up this weekend, this Saturday. So we will let's get started with this Braga game. Anticipated game, one of the games that was earmarked by our opponents as one of the games that Benfica could have possibly have lost points at the Pedreira. Let's start with the lineup. Vlaco Dimos, Almeida, Dias, Ferro, and Grimaldo. Samaris and Florentino in the middle. Pizzi and Rafa on the flanks. Felix and Seferovic up front. So nothing new here, with the exception that now it looks like Florentino has cemented a spot in his starting lineup, Christian.
Yeah, he's definitely been the guy that Bruno Lage has decided to pick to replace the injured Gabriel. Phenomenal young player. The guy is makes you relive those Feja days where we used to call Feja a destroyer, un trator, and he's been doing a lot of that and being able to foil a lot of the attacks coming the other way. So very glad to see him play at this stage. And it's good to have a kid with, you know, this big promise.
Yeah, so let me set the stage real quick. This is a Braga team that has not won a match against one of the big three. Having a chance to finally beat one of the big three teams in Benfica, coming to the Pedreira, playing in their stadium, they felt that this was a chance for them to redeem themselves especially from the, was it 6-2 at the Estádio da Luz earlier on in the season. And again, they're also fighting and chasing Sporting for that final third place, which gives you access to the Champions League pre-qualifiers, I believe, right?
No, they don't.
Third place doesn't give you a pre-qualifier?
Portugal hasn't scored enough points to get back there. So I think third place goes straight into Europa League. Second place is the one that goes into the playoff, if I'm not mistaken, because we're behind in the coefficient as we speak.
We're behind Russia, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a very important game, and you could tell right away as soon as the game started, good atmosphere, limited Benfica supporters there, but still an outpour of support, especially with both the Vermelhão, which is the Benfica's bus, leaving Lisbon, an outpour of support by the fans being there. Also the arrival in Vila Nova de Gaia, which is where Benfica stayed in the hotel prior to the game, an outpour of support there. Then arriving at the stadium, another outpour. So, but still, there was limited seats that were allocated to Benfica, as we discussed last week. But nonetheless, a very important support, and you could tell that the crowd was up for it. So Braga is definitely up for it with a point to prove. Started the game pressing Benfica very high intensity, trying not to let Benfica get comfortable. And Hugo, for those 15-20 minutes, it was nerve-wracking. Talk through what went through your mind during those 15-30 minutes.
Yeah, no, for sure. The first 15-20 minutes, I thought Benfica came out very flat. Braga really took the game to us. I think it had a lot to do with, obviously, Benfica, as a big team, does not like to be pressed high. And Braga started with a very high press. Sabino was leading us, as we say. And they really made life difficult for Benfica. And obviously, the icing on the cake was the goal at the half-hour mark of the game. And look, I really, aside from what I just mentioned that Braga did right, I think Benfica, I don't know if it was what you just touched on, Alfredo, all the outpouring of support, I don't know if, I'm sure that adds more pressure to the players, maybe it doesn't, but all I know is Benfica was not themselves in that first half. I think I made a joke with Cristiano during the first half that, I mean, if Benfica players had diapers, they would have to be changed because they were shitting bricks, just like us during the game. But again, got to give credit to Braga, right? They executed their game plan to perfection in that first half. However, obviously, to keep that up for 90 minutes is unless you're in your top physical shape, is practically impossible. And I think Benfica took advantage of that in the second half.
Yeah, Dave, how did you see the first half? I know that you put together some stats for the first half, but what were your feelings like in this first half? Definitely not the half that we're used to seeing Benfica have.
No, and it wasn't the way we all came here and spoke about last podcast, hoping that Benfica came out and controlled and dominated the game like we all expected. I felt like the back line was all shaky. They couldn't get the ball up to the midfielders, and they kept on just going side to side rather than push up and get the ball into the midfield. There was no linkage between the defenders and the midfielders, and even up top with João Felix and Seferovic. But overall, real shaky first half, and was not the first half that we all expected from a strong Benfica that was coming into this match. And at the end of it, Benfica controlled possession with 63% of it going into halftime, but it was Braga that was creating more chances with 10 shots compared to Benfica's 4 at the end of the first 45.
For the first time under this Bruno Lage era, guys, and tell me if I'm wrong here, Benfica showed their age, showed the inexperience in that first half. It seemed to me that they had a very, very difficult time being able to deal with Braga's press, even though, as Dave just mentioned, they had 67% percent possession, but most of that possession was in their own half. They were having a very difficult time coming out of their own half. And for the first time since Gabriel's injury, this is a game that Benfica, you could tell that Benfica was missing a key player like himself to be able to transport the ball and break those lines and being able to deal with the pressure that Braga was putting on. And again, Benfica showed their inexperience. They showed their age. As you mentioned before, Florentino and all these youngsters that have been inserted into the lineup, this is the first time that they're going down the stretch of a campeonato with so much on the line. The pressure was tremendous on Benfica, especially after Porto had dropped 2 points on Friday. Now, Benfica had all the pressure in the world and all the expectations that they needed to win this game in order to take advantage of Porto's slip-up. But fortunately enough, Bruno Lage was able to get these guys calm and under control at the half. And you know, they came out in the second half, a totally different team. But in that first half, very inexperienced, and they had no way of dealing with the fantastic Braga press.
I agree with you. Go ahead, Bruno.
No, Chris, I just wanted to add to that. If I could piggyback off of that, I couldn't agree more with what you just said about the inexperience. And I think a player like Florentino, when he watches this tape, when Lage and his staff dissects the tape of the game, I think it'll be a nice learning moment for the youngster, because on that first goal, Florentino has to do a tactical foul there and take a yellow card and just kill that counterattack. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that Lage and his staff will easily single out to the kid. And it'll be a nice learning experience for him going forward, because obviously, equipa foi apanhada em contrapé. And he's got to find a way to really just bring that guy down there and take a yellow card for the team.
Yeah. And look, nobody, everyone is always going to have a difficult time playing against a high press and a very intense high press, right? And unless your team is super drilled and knows the routines and knows where the escape valves are on these high presses, where the next ball is going to come from to break that high press, you're going to have a hard time. And when we look at this team and we look at how much time Lage's had with this team, he certainly hasn't had enough time with this team or even with the starting lineup to have him drilled to the point that they're able to pick out that ball to get out of the high press.
Yes and no, but you can still make in-game changes. And I thought that, and I mentioned on Twitter, for those of you that follow me, you know exactly what I'm talking about. I thought that he could have possibly had dropped João Félix into the midfield a lot earlier in order to give Benfica another outlet. I thought Pizzi was non-existent, and I mentioned on Twitter someone has his phone number, and I want to thank the person that took my advice and called him at the halftime and told him that the game had started, because in that first half he was missing, and it just seems that in every big game he does go missing. But he was nowhere to be found, and I thought – Benfica had a real difficult time of getting the ball out of their own half, and that's because they had two players in the midfield that were the only guys that were really coming back to get the ball, which was the Samadis and the Florentino. Neither one of those guys' strengths is to carry the ball and go forward with the ball. They're more of breaking up play of destroyers, guys that are there for their defensive reasons and not their offensive reasons. I thought Pizzi should have done a better job, and I thought that Bruno Lage, again, as I mentioned, he does need time with these guys off the field, but at the same time, as I mentioned before, we criticize Rui Vitória plenty for not making in-game changes, in-game tactical decisions. I thought Bruno Lage could have done that a little bit earlier. And I know it's a lot easier now. Like, you know, whatever, just ignore it. They won the game, and they had an impressive second half. And obviously, Benfica's a totally different team based on whatever the hell, you know, he told the players or whatever changes he made at the half. But I thought that he could have dealt with that pressure a lot earlier in the first half, which they didn't. And then Benfica, unfortunately enough, they went down 1-0. I know a lot of people are going to come here and call Ruben Dias a bruto, but like at that time, bro, like if he doesn't step in, he's going to shoot. It's a no-win situation, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It's a no-win situation right there. And, obviously, that was a foul, clear foul to clear foul. In the penalty box. And they got, you know, they put it away. They got the penalty, put it away. But I thought that there was ways that Benfica could have dealt with that press in the first half, and I was disappointed they didn't.
Yeah, here's the thing, Hugo, that I wanted to ask, and I want to piggyback on what Cristiano was saying. Do you think that Lage maybe had the wrong idea about how Braga were going to come out for this game?
Yes, I do. I think Lage expected Braga to be a bit more patient and conservative. I think Braga's approach to that first half definitely caught Benfica off guard a bit. And even a player who's been our staple since Lage took over, Samadis, looked lost in that first half. I don't know if you guys agree with me or not, but Samadis, that was probably his weakest in the first half, I should say, performance under Bruno Lage. So I think Avel's tactic definitely caught the team a bit off guard, and it impacted the first half for Benfica. And again, what Braga did was make Benfica uncomfortable by having a high press. But as I alluded to earlier, unless you're in your prime physical condition, it doesn't last for 90 minutes. And then that's when I'm sure that was part of Lage's speech at halftime. Like, hey, boys, look, these guys aren't going to be able to keep up this high press all game long. So let's just take the game over, because number one, we have to. And then number two, because we have more quality, let's face it. So definitely night and day, the first and the second half.
Braga came out like a wounded dog. I mean, obviously, you know, as you mentioned, the humiliation they went through at the start of the lose with the 6-2 defeat. And at the time, they were riding a very high wave. You know, a lot of people were claiming that, you know, or, you know, touting them as a title contender at the time. And Benfica really put a dash in those hopes. And then so they come home and like, this is our opportunity to show everybody that game was a fluke. And they came out like a wounded dog. Their pride was hurt. They wanted to prove to everybody that game was a fluke. And look, credit to them. First half, they made every second count. And you saw that these guys are professional athletes. Obviously, there's a lot of noise outside the pitch of Braga breathing pernas and Braga's Benfica and all this noise. And I think that affects a player, man. When you're a professional player, you know that you're doing your very best to go out there and play the best of your capabilities. And then you hear these unfortunate accusations just because things don't go your way. I think these guys have a lot of pride, and they tried to show that to everybody else, and credit to them. And I think it did catch Benfica off guard. I thought Benfica thought they were going to be a little bit more reserved, considering the fact that Benfica scored 6 goals on them. But to their credit, they came out totally different. And to Benfica's credit, they were able to adjust and make all the right decisions at the halftime. And then second half, Benfica, within the first 5 minutes, you could tell it was a totally different team. That first half, to me, it reminded me a lot of the match against the Frankfurt. It looked like Benfica was just a continuation of that game of not much intensity, obviously for different reasons, but it just seemed like, the totally different team in the second half. Benfica really meant business.
Yeah, absolutely. And look at, Cristiano often says this, when you have time and space, you could be the best player in the world. But when those two things are limited, now that's when you distinguish the men for the boys. So as Cristiano mentioned, Benfica came out of the locker room, totally different team, a team with a sense of urgency. And it didn't take long until we were on a scoreboard, albeit from a penalty kick, which there's a ton of controversy out there as far as what this penalty look. When I look at it, and I'm not looking at what red glasses, and from where the referee was standing, and after even reviewing the VAR, because every PK gets reviewed, there's a clear touch. And the other thing is that Dzhigayu, he didn't even protest, or he didn't even argue with the referee with the nature of the call, because he knew that he had touched Juan Felix. Yeah, you know, you could probably see something like that not being called in a Portuguese league, as we've seen so many times, especially against Porto or against Sporting or whatever. But nonetheless, a penalty is a penalty. And despite whether or not it broke the barrier, the Braga barrier, and got Benfica on a scoreboard, I thought that the way Benfica started was only going to be a matter of time. So 1-1 in the 59th, then another PK, which is clear, a handball, and Pizzi converted in the 66th, turnaround in the scoreboard, and then in the 69th minute, a great goal by Ruben Dias that just, I think that at that point, deflated Braga's chances or thoughts.
Yeah, but even before Benfica started scoring all these goals again on the scoreboard, I think Benfica had applied enough pressure in the second half. João Félix had a fantastic shot saved by the goalkeeper. He just tipped it up enough to make it go off the post. You could tell Benfica meant business. Benfica was going to apply pressure. Benfica was going to score. It was a matter of how many. It was when were we going to score, and then how many we were going to score, and Benfica did exactly that. There was some contact on the João Félix goal, and I just want to throw this out there, ladies and gentlemen. Anyone that's listening and anyone that questions, or tries to, because I've had a lot of people trying to bash Juan Felix because he embellished he made a meal out of that touch. Look, there was minimum contact there. I'm the first one to admit it was a very soft PK. But any one of you that wants to come here and criticize Juan Felix, for diving or whatever you want to call it, making a meal out of it, right? The only thing I got to say to you is you clearly have never played soccer a day in your life, because everybody and their mother is going to try to get a penalty in that situation. Everybody and their mother going to make a meal out of this situation. They're down 1-0 in a game that's a very, it's a huge step towards securing another title. And I don't care. Right back. I mean, how many times have we seen players flopping all over the field, and you're not going to flop in a box when there is contact? Look, you want to call it soft, I'm the first one to tell you it was a soft PK. But to act like there was no contact there, I think you're just being an a-hole. And to criticize João Félix for making a meal out of it clearly shows to me that you've never played the game a day in your life.
Yeah, Hugo, thoughts on the PK? Because I remember I wasn't watching the game live, and I remember trading a couple of texts, and you said clear as day.
Yeah, I definitely thought, again, for me, it goes down to how is it possible if when you watch that play live, that any referee in the world wouldn't immediately point to the spot when you see that play live, right? And then when you break it down with the VAR, again, as you guys just touched on a few seconds ago, there's a contact. There's clear contact. And I do agree, when you slow it down, you see that João makes the most of it. But again, to me, it's a clear penalty. And again, like you said, Dzhigayu doesn't even protest. He knew exactly what he had gone into, and he probably was like, shit. This guy just caught me with that. But to me, that was a clear penalty, easy call. And the only reason, obviously, as we know, why it's getting so much talk in Portuguese media is because it's Benfica and all the aunties are coming out. And I can't believe that there was a request by Porto to meet with the referee commission. I just have no words for those guys.
Yeah, it's certainly, you know, all the other times and throughout the season, or maybe in the beginning of the season where they should have been having these meetings is when they should have had them, not now where they see themselves. And no one's fault but theirs, right? They were up to nothing against Rio Ave, and they gave up the game in 10 or 15 minutes. So no fault of ours, but again, it's Benfica's fault, it's the VAR's fault, it's everybody's fault but their own. So they put themselves in the position that they're in. So they didn't win the game. It certainly wasn't what Benfica's help, for sure. So Rafa put the game away with 4-1.
And what a beauty.
Yeah, and look, it's one of those goals that you expect Rafa to score every week, because he just has so much pace and explosiveness on his dribble.
I don't know about expect, Alfredo, but that you anticipate he'll score, because he's always getting into those chances and then somehow he just finds a way to put them wide.
Well, but for a guy with his quickness and explosiveness and the way to dribble guys, this is something that should naturally come to Rafa.
Absolutely. He's been way more consistent this year, and I agree with you, man. If this guy finds a way to be even more consistent than what he's been this year, and finds a way to finalize some of these opportunities, this guy is going to be a very lethal option for Benfica going forward. And who knows, the Portuguese national team and so forth and so on.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So 4-1, great win. Dave's got some stats both on Pizzi and Rafa that he's gonna give us.
Yeah, for sure. So Pizzi, me and Cristiano were shooting texts back and forth at the beginning of the first half, calling him a Manku master, but he actually ends up putting two goals against Braga and assists. So he's got 12 goals and 18 assists this season, which is his personal best. And he's been involved in 30 of Benfica's 91 goals scored in Liga NOS this year. So 33% of the goals have come either by goals or assists by Rafa. So contributing on the goal scoring and assisting front. And Rafa has also broken his own personal record of 17 goals scored across all competitions. And that Rafa play doesn't happen if Seferovic buries that one-on-one chance that he has with the keeper. But we all know by now he's wasteful with his opportunities, even though he's the league top goal scorer.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny. If you guys were watching the game, you did watch the game, you see the camera pans to Luis Vieira as he's going through the agony of Sferovic missing that opportunity. Like, hey, but he's disgusted. I was like, oh shit! Like, and then I mean, that was beautifully done by Rafa. I mean, he went around. It looked like a slalom. I know it's the easy thing to go to, but it was slalom for me. My man, he did a fantastic job of getting around those guys and tucking it away with his left foot. Go ahead, Hugo.
No, I was just going to touch on what Dave had said about Beasy. I was just going to say that, and I think Chris, you alluded to earlier, obviously he didn't have a great first half, let's face it. But let's give the guy credit. He steps up to the penalty spot in the most crucial moment of the season, and he tucks two back-to-back PKs away with very calm, cool, and collected, and with a lot of class. So obviously just wanted to give him a shout-out, because I know us, myself and Cristiano, we agree on a lot about Beasy, and we think he should be stepping up more than he does. But listen, Benfica Nation needed him at that moment, and he came through and stepped up for us, and he should, because he's a very talented footballer, and we need him. We need him down the stretch, and we need him in the future.
I don't know where Pizzi put those penalties, because I can tell you, as soon as I saw that he was coming up to take the PK, I walked out of the room immediately and waited about 2 minutes to come back to see if he scored or not, because that guy gives me nerves whenever I see he's up to take a PK.
Dave, no tinha fé no pau. Tinha fé no pau.
Pizzi, who is being advertised by Relevant Sports, which is the organizer of the ICC, as one of the most influential midfielders in Europe. And I know, Hugo, you've had a couple of the
numbers online.
Sell them.
Exchanges on Twitter with people that clearly misunderstood that statement by Relevant Sports. But that's neither here nor there. The numbers do confirm. And regardless of whether he plays for Benfica and in the Liga NOS and plays against 80% of Manku teams, the guy's influence has been tremendous this season. And what a difference this season makes to last season and the past couple seasons, where we have seen a Pizzi at this stage of the season, kind of worn out of gas, a guy that's struggling.
But I think a lot of people's annoyance with a Pizzi, right, is and I think Rafa, you could throw him into this point that I'm about to make. I think they're both very similar, which is we criticize these two players so much because we see what Benfica is and what Benfica can be when these guys are playing to the ability that they're able to play to. And so when you see these guys missing in games, it gets frustrating. That's why a lot of people let out their frustrations on a Pizzi, like I did in the first half. It seemed like, you know, he was nowhere to be found. And so we know how good they could be. We know how good Benfica can be when these two players in particular are hitting on all cylinders. Benfica is a totally different team, guys. And so we demand that these guys play with that regularity and they're more with that consistency that we've grown too accustomed to seeing. They're able to toy with the Monkos. Let's have some of that consistency in these big important games. And to their credit, they stepped up this year. And in particular, Rafa this year has been magnificent. I mean, if you'd have told me last year at this time that Rafa would be this influential or that he'd be as good as he's been this year, I would tell you you're crazy. And to his credit, he's been nothing but brilliant this season. And Pizzi as well. I mean, Pizzi, like Hugo said, it takes balls of stone to come up to that position, to that with all that pressure and being able to bury the two very important penalties that give Benfica, one obviously ties it up and the other gives them the breathing room. And then Benfica was also, clean sailing from there forward.
Yeah, Cristiano talks about consistency. One guy that hasn't been consistent down the stretch, Dave, has been Seferovic. Quite wasteful. And while he got our season started with a little bit of a streak, and he's been quite consistent and a guy that we can count on for games, he has hit this final stretch of the season very wasteful.
But he's been consistent lately, consistently missing. So he's consistent when he's scoring, he's consistent when he's missing.
Dave.
There you go. Yeah, exactly as Chris calls it. You know, he's the leading goal scorer with 19 goals from 54 shots, but he's also the leader on our team with 16 goal opportunities missed. So he's banging them at a rate of 35%, but he's also missing them. He almost has as many misses as he does goals, but... For a guy that was thrown away at the summer preseason, I'll take his 19 goals, and I'm a little bit biased because I have his jersey. But he hasn't been producing on the final sector there.
This is the moment. This is the moment that Hugo steps in and tells you, "Look, I like Sferovic. He's helping Benfica. Mas não tem pinta para Benfica." Go ahead, Hugo. I just stole this thunder, but go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say that Sferovic is as advertised, right? You know, he's got the 19 goals this season, and I'm glad he does, right? Because I don't think we are where we are without his 19 goals, so let's give him credit. But if you look at Seferovic's career and his stats at Eintracht, his stats in Switzerland as well, I forget what club he initiated his pro career with, he's just not a natural finisher. He's a workhorse. He's a guy that's going to work for the Coletivo. But at the end of the day, he is just not he doesn't have that killer instinct to put goals in the back of the net. Obviously, this one season is the one where he's been the most productive. But I think that's Seferovic, and we just have to expect that and know exactly what we have. And again, like I said, I do give him tons of credit this season for having a fantastic season to this point.
And look, every player has their pros and cons, and Seferovic is a player that at least his role for Benfica is not just about scoring goals. The fact that he's tenacious, the guy does not stop challenging defenders, and he's also there to wear out defenders, which he does a tremendous job. And so I think, look, he's had a brilliant season. I think any Benfica, I don't care how long you've been a Benfica for or not, any Benfica fan would have signed up for 19 goals from Seferovic at the beginning.
And
very, very happy.
And let's give him credit for João Félix's season as well. I don't think, I think a lot of João's success has to do with having a partner like a Seferovic, because obviously he opens up space for a player like João Félix. So I also give him credit on that front as well.
I think it's been a very well matched up duo, and both of those have helped each other and their success that they've had this season, and Seferovic especially, because I think that once João Félix started getting more notice, Seferovic started getting more chances and more looks. But these are two guys that work extremely hard to get themselves in a position in prol do coletivo, as Hugo mentioned. And I think that, if you have to look, and regardless of Jonas and what Jonas has done this season, this has been, and the numbers don't lie, the most effective duo of our forward line. And look, I hope that they continue that through the rest of the remainder three games, which would be a good sign. But Dave, another stat that you had brought up here, Benfica with 128 total goals.
Yep, across all competitions, which is currently their 10th best of all time club record, with and they still have three games to go. So the record is 169 goals. I don't think we're going to get to that pace with only three games to go, but they can still definitely climb up and maybe even crack the top five with three games to go. And they've got 91 goals scored in the Campeonato, and the record for them is 99 goals, which was done in 1946-47. So that record is well within reach with three games to go.
All yeah. Thanks to Rui Vitória's offensive mastermind. All thanks to the guy.
Thanks to that light.
Yeah, I thought that I had read somewhere there were two goals away from another record that you didn't mention here, but I could be
90.
Wrong.
Yeah, they're about to get to 90 in the Campeonato, if I'm not mistaken, right?
They're at 91.
They're at 91.
Oh, so then they
need a couple more. So
I believe it's to get to the 100 mark, guys. I believe I read that article.
Yeah, but that's not one more.
Yeah.
No, they have to score 9 more goals
to get to 100.
To get to 100.
There were only two goals away from some sort of record, and I don't know if it's the 1961-60 season. I would have to look that up. But the first time Benfica has scored four goals at Braga since 1989 and 90. And pre-Lage, what was our record?
10 wins, 2 draws, 3 losses, 30 goals scored, 16 goals against. And now with Lage, 15 wins, 1 draw, 61 goals and 11 goals against. So the next game against Portimonense was the last game. That was the last game that Rui Vitória coached for this side. So it's been half a season now almost with Lage under control.
Yeah, and I remember seeing pictures of the press conference after that game where Rui Costa's absolute and Thiago Pinto are absolutely dejected by the result. And I don't think I've ever seen Rui Costa so sad in a press conference. And he was leaning against the wall, and he just had this look on his face. He was dejected.
Abençoada derrota.
Hey, don't say that, because there's people that have accused us of wanting Benfica to lose for Rui Vitória to be replaced. But yes, that was the straw that broke.
That was the one that Jardel headers, tries to clear it in. He headers it on goal, looked like he didn't know. And then,
it was a mess.
And then Rui, I think it was like 2-1 goals, right? Yeah. Something like that. It was like, I know one was definitely Jardel, and I forget who the second one was. But yeah, that game, I mean, taking us back to that moment in time, to where we're at now, I mean, you went from total desperation, total dejection to now, I mean, you're three games away from winning the Campeonato. Who would have ever thunk it that Benfica could have had such a magnificent second half and, you know, had the opportunity to change things around? And, I mean, it's look like you said, Vince Wilde of the Rota. If it wasn't for that, we might still be, you know, 8 points behind the leaders right now and really sucking this all in.
Yeah.
Quick question. I think we're getting a little ahead of ourselves here, but do we think Benfica has won this league, or did Porto lose this league?
No.
With the 7-point gap between us
at that time. I think that when you look at what Benfica has done, and yes, there was a 7-point deficit, but you go and beat Porto at the Dragão, you go and beat Sporting at the Alvalade, that's all merit on Benfica. You cannot say that Porto lost
Braga,
this game.
Braga.
Yeah, lost this championship. If they lose this championship, you can't say that that Porto gave up this championship to Benfica. There's tons of merit here, and in a very short period by Benfica, and of course, Lage is a big influence.
What I would say to that, Dave, to answer your question, it's no. And I get painful memories of that season where we won in Madeira against Maritim. I think there was three games left, and then we drew against Estoril at home. And then obviously all capped with that that 90-second minute. So to answer your question, no, and I think that it's important that everyone feels like the answer is no. So you don't want to pass that that euphoria on to the players, because I don't know if you guys will agree with me or not. I don't know if it was the Friday result that Porto had in Vila do Conde, but the players looked very, very uneasy in that first half. They looked very nervous. So I think that we have to approach this as nothing is won, because nothing has been clinched yet. And I think that's how we all have to approach it.
Yeah, definitely. And there's three games left. And the first game of those three is against Portimonense this Saturday, 6 p.m. local at Stadio Illusion. Dave, what's Portimonense up to?
Yeah, so they're currently in 12th position with 36 points, tied on points with Desportivo de Zaves. And Maritimo, who also have the exact same amount of points, but are in 10th and 11th position. They've got 10 wins, 6 draws, 15 losses, 40 goals scored, and 50 goals scored against. And they've got the 6th best goal scoring production in the league this year. And Jackson Martinez and Paulinho lead the attack for them.
Yeah, they lost a little bit of steam once Nakajima got sold. And if you recall, they beat Sporting 4-2, if I'm not mistaken, easily. Again, there's very strong ties to Porto. Portimonense coach Antonio Folha was a Porto player and also a coach in their system. Porto has bought Paulinho, Everton, Wilson Manafá from Portimonense. So there's clear a connection here. And if there was a game where the Mala might come into play, this is going to be the one. I'm expecting a very, very hard game for Benfica, especially at Stadio Luz, because they might just bring 3-4 buses to park.
4-0.
4-0?
Por Benfica, 4-0.
You're confident?
Oh, 100%. Look, first of all, and it's a scary thing, because a lot of times when I'm this comfortable at halftime, it's 0-0, and I'm like, eh, bah. But no, I think they're a totally different team from the team that Benfica faced in the first half in that last game. Oh, second to last game, or whatever it is, third to last game in the first half, that 2-0 defeat in Portimão. I think Nakajima, it was the little engine that made that team go. And without him, they're totally different. And so I think Benfica playing at home with so much riding on the line, these Portimonense players, yeah, still have Malas. I understand they'll have everything, spas and café con leite and fruta fresca delivered to these players the night before the match going into Benfica. But I think Benfica is going to steamroll these guys, and they're going to make this game look easy at the Stade de Luz come Saturday. And it's a game, real quick, and it's a game that Benfica, for the first time in a while, will play first than Futebol Clube do Porto plays. Just want to throw that out there.
Hugo, what are your thoughts on this game?
You know, I'm cautious. I have a bit of a cautious approach. Again, Portimonense is one of the better teams of our league. They are Porto B, as we just touched on. They have a lot of connections to that club, so they'll be highly motivated, especially with Folha behind the bench, to come in and try to upset Benfica. I think the crowd is important as well, because I think the crowd is going to sense that, and they're going to create a bit of an animosity maybe to a Portimonense that they're not used to in any other ground that they have to play in. So I think the crowd is going to play a key role. But again, to Chris's point, I think everything comes down to what we've touched on in previous podcasts. If we can bang an early goal into the game, it'll settle everybody down. It'll calm the nerves. And then we can just play our free-flowing football a lot more confidently. But if it's another nail-biter where we're drawn at half, or even worse, we were down at half this past weekend, it could create some tension in the crowd. I do think the cushion that we were gifted by our rivals this past weekend gives us a little bit more of a breathing room going down the stretch. And look, with three games left, two being at home, there's no excuses, guys. We have to wrap up this league title, and it starts with the game against Portimonense. And you guys touched on him earlier. The key figure for Portimonense and the guy that makes their football flow is Paulinho. So again, I think Samaris and Florentin will take care of that job. And once you take care of that job, I think it's a pretty much 80% of Portimonense's game.
Yeah, Dave, feeling confident for this Portimonense game?
Yeah, only because it is in Lisboa. If it was If we had to travel down to the Algarve, I would be concerned about maybe like we called the Mollish game. But yeah, I think Benfica has the obligation, like we've mentioned on many previous podcasts, to come out at home, control the pace of the game, and lay it on to Porto Moniz. And if we get that quick goal, then they'll just keep piling on. And if we don't get that quick goal, public service announcement here to the fans, please do not get on the players. The players need the support, so keep supporting the players, even if it does get testy there. But I'm not expecting that in this game.
Absolutely. After this Porto Moniz, we have a very, very difficult trip to Vila do Conde to play Rio Ave. And as we've been warned now by this game that Porto played in Vila do Conde against Rio Ave, is not going to be easy. Any trip up north is never easy for Benfica. Again, we heard about fireworks at the Benfica Hotel in Vila Nova de Gaia. And here's the thing, right? Vila Nova de Gaia is basically a suburb of Porto, or on the outskirts of Porto. If you're playing in Braga, why would you go stay in Vila Nova de Gaia? Why wouldn't you stay closer to Braga, or even a little bit lower than Braga? Why would you want to put yourself in the outskirts of Porto? I'm just saying. I'm saying that because when you travel to Vila do Conde, very likely you will have some more disturbances and distractions by the team up north that will try to get you off your focus. So just keep that in mind. But I never understood why you're going to Vila Nova de Gaia when you're playing in Braga. Or maybe, you know, are there no hotels in Braga that you could stay at? You know, so that's difficult. So after that trip to Vila do Conde, which is the second to last game, we have the last game against the
Santa Clara,
the Sorian team, Santa Clara at Stadio de Luz, which will hopefully be the celebration or the confirmation of our title. And we've all seen when the title goes down to the last game, and the last game is at Stadio de Luz. Reference here a few years back against Guimarães, what Benfica is able to do in that last game with the crowd support behind them. So very important stretch. Nothing is won. Yes, the cushion is important, and it gives us a little bit more breathing room. But again, that cushion is only in terms if we were to give up a point, then we're back on level terms with Porto. If they win their games, of course. But nonetheless, it's very important to remain focused. It's very important for the team to keep their eye on the prize and just play it out. Just play out the rest of the games and play like you know how, and you've demonstrated under Lage, and I think we'll be in good shape. I think that's all we got. Cristiano, do you want to add anything else so we could just say arrivederci?
Arrivederci. I'm ready to go.
You're ready to go?
Ready to go, bro. Just I want to wish everyone a good week in anticipation of this big matchup come Saturday.
Absolutely.
And
Chris, are you not going to give me props on air for saying that Porto would drop points in Vila do Conde to you that morning?
I absolutely would, Hugo. But the problem is, for the last 4 months, you've been saying Porto's going to drop points.
Like the boy who cried wolf.
That's it. And he's been crying wolf.
I was very confident that morning.
It's wishful thinking.
He was confident last week against Santa Clara. Very confident. He called me all day, harassed me, actually. He's very confident. And then they didn't drop points. So, I mean, sooner or later, he's going to get it right. And credit to him, he finally got it right. So he's 2-18.
I can confidently say, and I haven't – there's only one other person that knows this. Not even my wife knows this. I've been known to gamble a little bit of coin, nothing major. And I had everything that I had in my bank on DraftKings, which was $89, I put everything on Porto to win against Rio Ave.
Oof. I'm glad you lost those $89. Sorry about that.
Now we know your bank account is
so, yeah.
No há dinheiro para pagar as contas. So if you guys are listening, you want to throw this guy $35 for being below the threshold, go ahead, DM us and we'll give you his bank information.
So all in on Porto. And it was either, you know, I'm going to be happy that they won and I'm going to get $20 back because the odds definitely were in favor of Porto, or I'm just going to be happy that they drop points. So either one or. And look, money is definitely not more important than Benfica winning this title.
Amen, brother.
That's all we got.
So you're saying you're gonna drop some more money again this weekend on Porto, right?
No, now we got the lead. We don't need that.
Just make sure when it's Dragarts versus Dragarts on the final weekend of the season, that you throw all your money on Porto, because there's no chance Sporting's taking points away from that game.
Yeah, I doubt it. We'll see. So that's all we got for this week. You could follow us on Twitter at 10CO10 is where you can find Cristiano. He usually has very engaging conversations on Twitter. At 87DO87 is where you can find Dave De Oliveira. Hugo is still haven't memorized it, so you're going to have to throw out your Twitter handle.
Hufer_10.
HUFER_10.
Correct.
At Benfica Podcast is where you can find Cristiano. Cristiano still has that amazed look on his face. Why haven't you changed it?
No. Because Cristiano swears he's the only number 10 in the world, but I play the same position he does, and he hates it.
Cristiano just wants the Twitter name to be that easy.
That's it. And he doesn't. He plays the same position. That's why he's always on the bench, though. He's playing out because I'm hurt. But
we're not going to go. We're not going to go down that road. Yeah, at Benfica Podcast is where you can find us on Twitter, BenficaPodcast.com. Don't forget to visit our site. That's where we post our podcasts, and it's a nice site to look at. We're on iTunes. I believe we're on Spotify and all the usual channels that you can find our past podcast on. If it's the first time you're listening to our podcast, don't forget to get all your friends to listen, especially the ones that don't listen. We would like to think that we're entertaining. At least Cristiano is a little bit entertaining. Next week we'll be back. We'll recap this Portimonense game, and we'll look ahead to the game in Vila do Conde against Rio Ave. That's all we got for you this week. Thank you very much for checking us out, and for listening, and for subscribing, and for rating us. My name is Alfredo. Cristiano, Hugo, and Dave have been here with me, and see everybody later. Bye.